Hey, this is Rob Ansbach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes for those keeping count. This is episode 375, and my next guest hasn't been with us for 3.5 years because she's been traveling, and she just got back from Machu Picchu. And so I want to welcome back Amanda Robinson. And the last time we saw her was January 2022, but back then, that episode was called A Swift Kick in the
Swift
Ad.
kick in the ads.
So we're going to revisit that and talk about some new stuff. So thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me back. I am so excited. And yes, lots has happened in the last few years. So,
You know,
really excited to catch up.
I was watching your pictures every day when you're posting them and your trip to Machu Picchu, and it's always been one of those things that I wanted to go visit. But never had a chance.
It was pretty epic. I've been planning it for almost a year. My cousin said, "Hey, we're gonna go hike Machu Picchu. There's a group of us. Do you want to come?" And I said, "Yes." So, that planted the seed. And then I needed to get myself physically in shape because I'd let myself get a little out of shape, and that was the catalyst. So from there, I decided that I need to start doing a whole bunch of hiking and trying to do Stairmaster, and that was kicking my butt. But back in January this past year, I wrecked my ankle. So I'm, starting to get all like ramped up for this, and then I sprained my ankle really badly. I couldn't hike whatsoever from January until May. And then I have from May to July to get myself kind of back up to speed and in prep before doing the Inca Trail, hiking the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. I hiked the West Coast Trail here on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And that's 7 days, 6 nights of rugged Canadian coastline. Where you're hiking beaches and forest and chasing tides and filtering your own water and carrying everything on your own back. And that was phenomenal. So I achieved that big goal, which gave me a lot more confidence to get myself going to hike the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. I did a little stopover in Ecuador before I went to Peru. And I just had like, it's just such an experience between the waterfall chasing and the hikes with the epic views and the people that I got to meet and the food I got to experience and the culture I got to experience. It's very eye-opening. As well as I know, I travel a lot, but when I say I travel a lot, I'm not out there, world traveling and adventuring. I'm usually on an airplane in an airport in North America, going from one city to the next to teach and speak on Facebook advertising. So to have the opportunity to kind of break away this year and do some pretty epic waterfall and mountain chasing adventures, that was well worth it. And Machu Picchu, my goodness, if you ever get the opportunity to go, it'll blow your mind because it's way more than just the pictures that you're seeing online. It makes us feel so small in this really big world of all the possibilities that are out there for civilization. It's pretty neat.
Well, last year we took 2 weeks and we went to southern France, and we did Lourdes and Toulouse and Nice and Ez and Monaco and some of the small towns in between. But yeah, it's different because those are still first world countries. You know, you can still go out and have public toiletries, and you can get, a soda at the corner store. You can't do that in Machu Picchu.
No, that was a small adjustment going down to Ecuador and Peru, where, sanitation operates a little bit differently. Things are a little bit different. And, coming from my little North America brain, there was a little bit of an adjustment period. But once I got in the swing of it, it was okay. I'll tell you though, on the Inca Trail going to Machu Picchu, you've got porters, you've got your hikers, and then you've got your porters. There were nine of us hikers, and there were, I think, 19 of them to support this hike with the requirements of everything that they have to carry between all the food that they're carrying to support the tents and the food tents and the chairs and all the things. But one of the things that they had to carry with them was a little kind of change tent and a small toilet. So at every, when they set up for lunch, there would be a toilet that they had to set up. Everyone would use that, and then that thing would have to get emptied, cleaned, and then packed in all the porter's bags, and off we go again to the next location for dinner. And then that's where we'd spend the night. And that was an adjustment. That's if I could never do that again, that would be okay. Well, because I'm so used to, the hiking and camping the way I do it out here, where, you've got the woods at your disposal and there's tactics and things you can do. And that was just an adjustment. So I don't miss that, but that's a small price to pay for the epic experiences to explore down there.
How many miles a day did you hike?
That one wasn't bad. Machu Picchu, the Inca Trail, that was only 4 days and I think something like 40 kilometers ish, maybe. But it's the elevation and the amount of up and then the amount of down. And when I did the West Coast Trail, that was 75 kilometers. But it's more, I don't want to say more, yeah, I guess more technical, where, there's one thing to walk 75 kilometers in a straight line. It's another thing to do it when you're walking across beaches where you're sinking into the sand, feeling like you're walking in ski boots in deep snow for hours, and then climbing up forest routes and then climbing all the way back down to sea level again and navigating tidal shelves that are all super slippery with barnacles and all sorts of things. And then the things that you encounter there are very, very technical. So there were days where at the beginning of the trail, the first 4 days, you kind of breeze through the first 4 days exhausted, but you can cover a lot of land. The last couple days, it is like we were only maybe going 6 kilometers a day. And it just the amount of technical, like we had one day where we had 29 ladders where you climb all the way down into the gully, down to like a river floor, and then you climb all these ladders back all the way up to the top, a couple kilometers up into the forest, and then you do it again. So there were, yeah, it's it, the volume of kilometers, I think, or sorry, I'm kilometers because I'm Canadian. It's totally irrelevant to the technicality of the terrain. And I'd say both of those hikes were extraordinarily difficult in their own ways. And I'm glad I've checked the box and said, okay, I've done those. I'm good. On to the next.
Sounds like all the walking we do at Disney World. When you do a 4 day park hop, I think the last time we did it was we were averaging, 12 miles a day. And you're like, this is why people burn out because it's just
Yeah.
too much. They didn't train for it.
I
So
was
they, you know,
I
and
had
I
convinced.
saw that your boots that you had, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, you blew through those boots and just a few.
I bought those boots brand new in May when my ankle had healed and I could finally get back to hiking again. So I bought a brand new pair of boots. And the irony of this is that I had been shopping the week that I wrecked my ankle. I had been shopping for a new pair of boots because I wanted ankle support. And the day I went out, I'd looked for boots on that Monday and I tried on like every boot in the store and none of them were quite right. And if you don't have the right boot for the volume of hiking, you can lose toenails with friction and so it's not good. So I didn't purchase the boots on that Monday and it was the Wednesday I went and did that hike and wrecked my ankle. And if I had bought a pair of high top boots, I wouldn't have wrecked my ankle. So it's like, ah, it's such the kicker. But in May, I bought the new boots that I have put so many kilometers on, and now fast forward to when I finished that trail was beginning of October for the Inca Trail, and the boots are they've had their day. They're pretty wrecked up. They need to get replaced. So
When I went to France, though, I still had Wi-Fi. I had Wi-Fi everywhere, so I could still work. How did you work on the Inca Trail?
this year is So I've been in business for 10 years and I've been running a digital business since before working remotely was within reach for a lot of people. And I was doing it very hardcore ways, very expensive ways of having like a mobile internet box that would cost me hundreds of dollars just to operate it while I was road tripping around. So fast forward, now we've got satellite internet and Starlink, things like that. And I've built a business where I really can travel and work from anywhere. And I do. And people don't see the behind the scenes. They see me traveling and doing all these fun things that I post online, but they don't see the client calls that I have to do in the craziest of places while I'm absolutely utterly exhausted to pull it all off. But I do. I've been able to work pretty much every week without interruption for almost 10 years. And fast forward to now, like I've been on family vacations in the Caribbean where I'm sitting at a swim up bar with my laptop on with clients because that was the only way I could make that work to physically go. So for this round this year, like I can't work from the West Coast Trail. There's no There's no cell reception out there. That's a full week of being disconnected from clients. I can't work on the Inca Trail. I'm not taking a hucking a laptop up to Dead Woman's Pass. It ain't happening. So this is the first year where I've had to learn to just fully disconnect. And it's not the disconnect in the way that a lot of you are probably thinking of, like, oh, it's so nice to finally just disconnect and not be on with clients. No, when you run a business and you are the business, in order to disconnect, you got to work about four times harder in the lead up to be able to have all of your clients taken care of, everybody set up, everything operating, working ahead, pre-scheduled, whatever, having everything the way it should be to be able to disappear for a week and know that things aren't going to fall apart. And in our world, in digital marketing, things change very quickly. So you might have the best of intentions, but yes, things can go wrong very
You
quickly,
know,
especially working on a platform that changes.
and I do schedule a lot of things out just so that I don't have to worry about it constantly. I know that there's a lot of people who like to post, you know, in that moment. And that's great, but then it ties you to be in front of that computer or that phone, that device.
Well, in my world, imagine this, working with so I focus on Facebook and Instagram advertising. And let's say I've got clients in the real estate world where we have listings that we're promoting, and then while I'm away, they sell one of those listings. And now we need to take that listing down to be in compliance with advertising laws in their region. So there's little things like that where we had to work, I had to work ahead with clients, position everything properly. Mind you, I've been laying the groundwork to be in a good position to do this for several years. Even looking back to the contracts, when I sign on a new client, I now include in my contracts language and wording around Canadian versus US holidays and when I'm going to be accessible, reachable, how I even have in there that I do have batches of travel. And if I'm going to be traveling for certain periods of time, I communicate that to clients in advance and how I address accommodating meetings around that. So I've learned to build all of that language into the contracts, and I've learned to prep new clients as I onboard them from the get-go. I had a client I onboarded this past year, and right away I said to them, okay, I'm home right now. I don't have travel right now for the next several weeks. So things are going to feel pretty normal, but then there are going to be times where we're doing Zoom call and I'm going to be inside of a tent or on the side of a mountain or on a beach with, the ocean and a waterfall behind me, and these things happen. And sure enough, I think the next subsequent six calls I had with them, it was inside of a tent, it was on the side of a beach, it was every location, it was in an airport, it was in, and they're like, Mandy, you really weren't kidding. And I'm like, I know. But I've learned to prep clients for this rather than having to. Clients are a lot more understanding when they know that's the case and they know that that's the norm. So sometimes they'll feel like when they're hopping on a call, they're like, "Oh, we can reschedule if you're in the airport." I'm like, "No, we're not rescheduling because it will be a perpetual reschedule. We get the job done, we get the work done. It doesn't matter what physical location I'm in. I'm here for you. So let's make this work."
Yeah, you know, I've had a couple of people I've been on Zoom calls with, and they'll blur the background out, and they might be at Starbucks. And I said, just don't worry about blurring it. It doesn't matter. And then I have the people in the background will see, and I'll wave to them, and I'm like, whatever, just go with it. You know, we're in the airport, and yeah, stuff happens. Just I don't need to have you blur it just because I'm gonna still hear them.
And thank you, by the way, you've accommodated for us recording today. I think we had to reschedule three times. And I appreciate that because I would have been physically on airplanes during most of those reschedules.
I don't reschedule for most people.
I appreciate it a lot.
Know, the we're going to go back to, you know, the swift kick in the ads, and you know, you're just one of those nonstop. Well, you stopped. You're at your home now, but you're always on the go. And you know, you've already explained to your clients, hey, you know, I could be here, I could be there. And they appreciate that. But when it comes down to the ads, and now Facebook is running their whole AI thing, which I'd rather have a human go through my ads than AI. That's just me. Even though I teach AI, there are certain aspects of AI I don't want to give control to.
You still need both. You need to be embracing AI from not you necessarily, Rob, you,
I
but you,
agree.
everybody listening or everybody touching ads, at the moment, you still need to have an understanding of AI. You need to start embracing it. You need to start using it, but you still need a human or either yourself or support from somebody to help you craft these into a place where they're being effective. So we're in what I call this awkward teenage phase of growing pains where Meta is adapting their systems and starting to lean full into AI, but the ads network needs to evolve to accommodate that. And then there's that further step where us as advertisers still need to be taught and trained how to work within the AI environment. So, for example, Meta has anything in the back end of the advertising network where you see Advantage Plus. So Advantage Plus budgets, Advantage Plus targeting, Advantage Plus placements, Advantage Plus creative. All of those areas are Advantage Plus is Meta's AI coming in to help make some decisions and do the heavy lifting for you. But it is going completely against the grain for everything that we have traditionally learned, been taught, and experienced firsthand over the last decade of running ads on Meta's platform. Back in the day, we used to be able to custom craft our targeting and do interest-based targeting, behavioral-based targeting. We could custom craft these really precision targeted audiences, and that was the secret sauce that used to make our ads so successful on the platform. Well, enter a lot of changes, a lot of varying privacy and data laws from one country to the next country, from one state to the next state. And slowly, our ability to use a lot of those functions has gotten smaller and smaller and more constricted. And now AI enters the chat. And now AI is essentially taking all the little puzzle piece components that we are supplying as advertisers from our images, our videos, our text, our call to actions, our links, all of that. We hand that over like a little set of puzzle pieces, and Meta's AI is going to mix and match that in multiple different combinations to resonate with different target audiences in different ways. And Meta's going to continue to help reach different audiences based on data, not just based on, oh, well, I think I want to reach people with an interest in health and wellness who also like alpacas. I don't know, you know? So our tactics as advertisers, we've had to pivot, but we can't pivot as fast as AI because our hands-on personal experience doesn't reflect the tactics that we need to adapt to.
Right.
So it's very hard to let go of control of the system, but when we realize at this moment in time, we really don't have control over what's happening in the ads network, Meta is adapting the back end of their systems to help us, and we need to embrace that. But there are the growing pains that go with it. An example is a client who needs to reach women on the platform with their female-focused product. Well, with Meta's Advantage Plus targeting, it's expanding our audiences out and reaching men. So now the majority of the ad delivery is delivering to men because Meta's system is like, we're going to reach additional people who may help you achieve the desired result. I'm like, well, no, you're not helping. And our ability to edit those campaigns and switch to original audience options and choose to have it adhere to the settings and constraints that we're asking for tanks our ad results and tanks our reach. So it is the growing pains of the wild, wild west of AI weaving itself into our traditional sense of understanding how advertising works.
Well,
And
and
it's
it didn't help when a couple of years ago Apple decided that they were going to eliminate tracking.
iOS 14. I've still not mentally recovered from iOS 14. I'm not even kidding. So there have been two sort
I
of
have iOS
revolutions.
26 on an iPhone 12 and it's
You're crazy.
glitches.
So there have been two moments in my career, running Facebook and Instagram advertising, teaching it, doing what I do, and I'm very, very passionate about what I do, and I'm really passionate about the businesses that I help. But there have been two times in my entire career where I kind of have these moments of, huh, should I like go become a barista or go become a kayak instructor? Or, you know, one of them was when iOS 14 rolled out and all of our tracking across Meta's platform for our website visitor audiences, our retargeting, all of that tanked. And then I had to be the one to talk to clients and not make excuses, but had to help clients navigate through this. And they're looking at me as a service provider saying, well, why can't we get the results we got last month or the month before. That was very difficult. But it shook out all the people in the digital marketing space who also thought, oh yeah, I can also be an advertiser. And they weren't really all in full time. They were just dabbling with it. It shook all of those people out of because they couldn't keep up with it. It was torture and it was tough. And there are some advertisers, some of my peers in my industry who will say, iOS 14 was not a big deal. And I don't know why everyone's making a big deal of it. I'm like, you had different clients. You had different clients because you weren't relying on this. So anyway, iOS 14 was one. And the second one is AI. Anything Meta Advantage Plus. So I'm going through it right now with clients, with students that I support, with businesses and the people that I'm teaching and training. We're all going through it right now. The system is changing. The ad results are a little bit volatile while we're learning to navigate through this. And I don't see it slowing down anytime for 2026. Maybe 2027, it'll be completely different. But right now, it's kind of a strap on. We are on this roller coaster together, and I'm not getting off the ride. I am here. I'm committed, and I'm going to help people navigate through this as best we can. But it as a as somebody who's been doing advertising for a very long time, this one, it what it's doing is expanding the amount of hours and energy and effort that I have to put into a job that I'm already working at a high rate of exertion and mental brain power. I'm already working at a top level, and then we just add all these extra hours of troubleshooting on top of it, and we amplify that across all the hundreds of different businesses that I interface with and interact with. So instead of having one troubleshooting question from a business, now I might have five troubleshooting questions from that same business multiplied out by hundreds. And that becomes very taxing over time, and I can't wait until we're on the other side of this, just like at when we got on the other side of iOS 14. End rant.
How long have you been working for Meta?
I don't work for Meta. I do work on
Just
behalf of Meta.
speaking, do
Yeah,
speak.
so I'll do work on behalf of Meta in the teaching and speaking space, and I've been doing that for coming on 4 years now. Yeah, but I've been in business as the digital gal, teaching and speaking and doing ads for clients for well over a decade now.
And the affiliation with Meta has helped your business grow?
No, interestingly enough, no, I know. Interestingly enough, because the work that I do to support those programs with Meta, I don't take business from those events, meaning if I'm in a room teaching a group of 100 small business owners how to use Meta's platforms or how to use different tools, those businesses in the room, if somebody comes up to me at the end and says, oh my gosh, I loved everything about what you did, can I work with you? The answer is no, because that's part of the nature of the work. If I'm representing Meta at an event, then that's not business that I can take over onto the digital gal side and then work with them as a client. And
And
that's just another way.
I want all the listeners to understand that, you know, that right there is not only discipline, but it's ethical. You know, when you're hired by somebody to do something, you do it for them. They get the credit. You're just there as the instrument. But
Exactly.
I know so many people who will take advantage of that opportunity
I
and exploit it.
respect that relationship so much, and I respect any relationship, business relationship that I'm in, and the opportunities that I've had personally, the experience I've gotten personally out of all of these speaking events has been so phenomenal for me. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be able to do this with where my career has grown into. And, you know, but when it comes to does that grow my business? No, actually, because it takes time away from my business to physically be away from my desk and physically be, you know, putting energy and effort into somebody else's business, which is okay. It's just, but it really is interesting how I have to work at my own business to grow my own business proactively year over year, like every entrepreneur. And if I take my foot off that gas pedal even a little bit, my leads start to slowly dwindle and then the relationships start to go quiet. And so it really takes proactive effort for me to show up to conferences and events, network with my peers in this industry, have conversations, have one-on-ones. Take the business that my peers refer to me and do good by them and make their clients look good. It, you know, if I'm off hiking Machu Picchu or hiking the West Coast Trail, I'm not able to do that. So it's quite a balance of learning to live life the way I would love to live it, but also I'm a business owner and you gotta work hard to
Well,
make
you
all
got to
this
work
happen.
hard, but you also play hard. And I've seen a lot of the great pictures that you post, and you go out there and you have fun. And I think for most entrepreneurs, they forget the fun side. It's always, oh, I better check the computer. I gotta sign in. I gotta check emails. I gotta do this. You're tied to your phones all the time. And I see you at Blue Jay games and down at Disneyland and with your friend Jen and you're just having a blast. And I think, entrepreneurs need to embrace the fun.
I'm still not over the Blue Jays loss, by the way. I just still a little tender at the
Well,
moment.
the picture I
I
saw, you had a picture right on your face, and it was like, wow, you really take that to the next level.
I painted. I got a face painting kit, and I hand painted the Blue Jays logo on my cheek, and I went all in. And I was so excited. It's pretty special. One of the things in Canada, we don't have the same volume of sports teams in Canada that our friends in the States do. So when one of our teams is doing well, it brings the entire country together. And especially with all the craziness and chaos going on with the economy, with politics, with all the things in between, having something that takes Canadians and brings us all together into one big party is pretty darn exciting. So that World Series where we all got the opportunity to cheer together was very, very, very special. I mean, last time we were able to do that was what, 92, 93? So it was pretty good.
But you did touch on the economy, and I think that the media plays into that a lot. They do the whole doom and gloom thing, and it gets entrepreneurs to cut back, and they'll say, I don't want to spend on this, I don't want to do this. Has that affected, Meta advertising at all? Has it affected, what you can do for them?
Well, let me give you one example: the economy, politics, all of that. We've got tariffs that we have to take into consideration. So I've had clients approach me that have been advertising to the United States. So they're out, like, say, a Canadian company advertising to the States. Well, when they couldn't ship to the States, from a tariff perspective, now they need to reach other markets. So they're now coming to me and saying, we need to pivot our ad strategy. We need to reach into different markets, and it's changing everything. So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it, I've had quite a turnover in clients because over this past year, because their business models are suffering. So they don't have the additional income, the additional marketing ad spend to be able to continue to expand. So they've been pulling back. But every time you have a big change in the market or economy or industry, like when we had the pandemic, there were a whole bunch of businesses that had to go full stop pause because they can't even take customers. But then it created a whole other economy. For example, I had a winery who came to me and they're like, well, we can't physically have people come in for in-person wine tastings. That's how we move millions of dollars of product. Now we need to sell it online. So the same kind of thing is happening right now. We're seeing some pretty big shifts with the economy, but it's causing some businesses to suffer and it's causing other businesses to thrive. So it's just causing a little bit of a turnover of the different types of businesses who will reach out to me. But yeah, it's as entrepreneurs, if you're in business for like 10 years or more, not every 10 of them is going to be a home run. There are going to be
No,
great years, and there are going to be tough years.
I started on Spark Media in 2001, so next year will be in January, will be 25 years, and I just lost a 10-year client. They wanted to cut back. I said, okay, fine. I said, you can't afford me, you can't afford me. I'm not going to beg and plead to keep you. So they went with an AI service who's now generating all their stuff, and I looked at their new website, which has blog articles. They're using stock photos. And when you trace those photos back, hundreds of other people are using the same images. And they completely stopped posting to social. And now they want to clone their images to have AI generated videos. I'm sorry, but where's the trust in that? Everything that you're doing right now is lessening the trust. Instead of building it. And so, we're we're back to this AI, and I've written books about AI. I use AI, but it's a tool.
It
You
is a tool
gotta
right now.
learn how to use it.
Yes. And you have to learn how to prompt with it. A lot of the trainings I'm doing on behalf of Meta right now are all about prompt engineering and how to use Meta's AI systems. So, how to prompt better to get better results coming out of the system. So, if we are the more that we can polish our skills on what we're asking of AI to be able to produce for us, the more effective it's going to be as a business partner companion for us and be able to integrate into our lifestyles. It's not going away. It's here. So it's either we figure out how to use it or we get left behind.
And I'm glad that you said prompt engineering, because a lot of people just say, and I made a video about it, the whole prompt to profit thing. And I'm like, yes, but you're not profiting from a prompt if you don't know how to use the prompt. Generic results get generic money,
Yes.
you know.
One of the things I've started doing very heavily is if I'm using AI for any purpose, first of all, I'm working it into my contracts so clients know, yes, I am using it in certain for certain functions. But any of the results that it's spitting back out at me, especially if I'm using it for any type of brainstorming or new campaign angles or things like that, then I'm testing it to say, is anybody else currently using this idea? Is this being mapped based on experience from a different advertiser? Is this so making sure that the ideas are original and that the content isn't being regurgitated from other sources, and then testing the system, being very critical and scrutinizing the results that come back out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's where we lose some of this stuff. We don't test it the right way. We just give it the some generic prompt and hope for the best. And you can't do that.
It's
You can't.
hard not to get excited about the results that come back when you prompt and it gives you a very positive, very wonderful response. And you're like, oh, I never thought of that. This is great. So you get lost in the excitement of, oh, wow, that was easy. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yes, this is great. That you grab that and run with it without second guessing or asking or taking a deeper look to say, is
Oh,
this accurate or are we grabbing somebody else's idea and running with this? Are we just now becoming a giant echo chamber of all of us marketers doing the same thing that all the other marketers are doing? Because AI is giving us all the same response, but just with a different personality behind it.
I got into an argument with ChatGPT the other day, and it says, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I missed the deadline." You're the one who gave me the, it's a, okay, and then it said, I'll have a new response to you with a new printout, by this time. Okay, I'm gonna walk away and go do something else. I came back and it couldn't do it. And this
Yeah.
went on for hours. That
It's
just strung me along, and I'm like, you're just
yeah.
checking me along. And it apologized, and I
Oh,
said,
the amount of times that that AI hallucinates and just brings its own content to the table, it's very frustrating, and especially because it can sometimes be quite subtle and how it just weaves a little new detail in there. You're like, wait. And you don't catch it at first, and then that sort of becomes its new truth. So it's tough depending on the nature of what you're working on to make sure everything is accurate.
So where people go? Where do they find you? Well, they can go to Canada.
Yeah, come to Canada. Come hang out with me. I'll take you whale watching. We'll go do some hikes. Mind you, the hike might be several days and you might be exhausted by the end of it, but still.
I'm there. Yeah. The
People can
whales.
find me. People can find me all around the web everywhere at The Digital Gal. So you can find me at thedigitalgal.com. You can find me on Instagram at The Digital Gal. You can find me over on Facebook, The Digital Gal. So everything and anything, The Digital Gal. And if you want to learn how to do Facebook and Instagram advertising for yourself with the support of a professional to help you along the way, you should definitely consider Swift Kick in the Ads. That's my membership training program.
And everything is pink.
Everything's pink. All about the pink.
It just I'm going through your website right now. It's right in front of me. And it's great. It was designed well. It flows great. It shows exactly what you can expect. And for everybody that's running Facebook ads, please reach out to her, because yes, there are a lot of programs out there, but she does this every day, and she's endorsed by Meta. So that tells you something.
Meta, a certified Meta lead trainer. It's been a wild, wild ride, working in Meta's platforms for a lot of years, and I'm very excited that I've been able to build a career out of it and support my hiking, camping, and adventuring lifestyle.
And you've been to their location?
Nope. So and again, I want to make sure that I want to make sure there's a clear separation that I don't work for Meta. I work on behalf of, so I'm an independent contractor. I do my own thing, but I get the pleasure of being able to support some of their programs by being a trainer that goes to events on their behalf. So that's pretty cool. I've been very fortunate that way.
Yeah, that sounds awesome though, because I've been doing the digital thing for a long, long time, and even in our agency, we're pulling back a lot of the content. We're not producing as much for people because they expect instant results. And
Yes.
I'll say, look, we'll come in as a package deal. You get your marketing, you get your book, you get this, your podcast, and we'll create social off that. But if you're just calling me for a la carte social media, I'm not interested.
Yeah. It's I usually say to people it takes a minimum of 3 months to get momentum. And that's on the ad side of things, but a lot of that also involves them getting their content mix kind of polished up to the point where we're getting
Well,
results
with
out of it.
us, we charge the first 3 months up front, and a lot of people are like, well,
Wow.
I don't have that kind of money. And I understand that, but here's the thing is those 3 months are the foundation months. We
Yes.
create so much content for you in those 3 months. And if in 30 days you say, well, Rob, I'm not seeing the result, and then you cancel, we've got all this content already produced.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen so many times because people think, oh, I'm going to get enough results that I can continue to pay you. That's not the
Yeah.
case. And
I get
so.
the same on the ad side. I've learned over the years, it took me a long time to learn this, that clients that I begin working with, there's just a typical pattern and cycle where we start the first month, they're so excited and they're excited to get going, and we get some ads up and running. They're like, okay. By month two, they're like, all right, well, I'm still, blind faith following along with what you're doing. By month three, they're not seeing dollars and cents come back in, and they've been putting dollars and cents out on me and on the ad spend. And they get to this nervous excitement level of like, we don't know what to do. Do we keep you? Do we fire you? Do we? So over time, I've learned once we get over the third month, that's when we're over the hump. And I know I've got a pretty good system and formula for getting clients over that hump. But once we get the momentum rolling, then they not only do they see the vision, they're like, oh, we can't afford to not be doing this. I'm like, I know, right? It's just the growing pains of getting over that first 3 months for all of us. For me, getting started with the new brand, their assets, the creative, figuring out what their audiences are responding to, building audiences, getting pixel going, getting data flowing through the accounts. Like, I can't just manufacture results with no data to go off of. We need time and we need ad spend to get us up to speed. And then once we have that engine running, then it builds momentum from there. So it's, yeah, learning that cycle and getting to the point where I'm not 3 months in having really stressful conversations with clients. I feel like that's a part of the business maturity that I've arrived at that I'm so glad I'm on this side of it versus when I was younger in business and I was right in the stress with all of them going, I don't know why, it's gonna work. I know, but I don't know how to tell you it's gonna work.
Yeah, and maturity does a lot of things for businesses. And we learn to say no
Yes.
quickly. We can pinpoint the time wasters, the tire kickers,
Yes.
and we implement things that make us more authoritative. And yes, I could probably pick up a lot more business if I don't charge the first 3 months in advance. Once you get past that, then it's monthly. But people are like, well, Rob, I don't want to dish out $21,000 or all this money all up front. You're spending that on a monthly basis anyway. But they to them it's just this is too much money out right away.
Yeah, my business model is the first 3 months that I'm working with a client is the highest volume of workload for me because I'm still learning their brand, wrapping my systems around getting their brand supported. But I fast forward, there's one client in mind I'm thinking of where there's a lot of moving pieces, and for me getting an understanding understanding of not mixing up the different brands and the different nuances between the brands. It took a long time for me to learn it and get it to the point where we can just have our meetings and have our conversations and we can topic switch all the way through. I'm like, yep, I understand that. I understand that. I understand that. And to be able to move so quickly, now it's less volume of effort for me to service that client at the same rate of success as previous. So the first 3 months when I take on a new client, the amount of workload that sits on my shoulders is immense, and I don't charge up front for that, and I don't charge any onboarding fees, and I don't charge anything for that. I take the hit and I absorb that because I know that once I get to a 3 month mark with a client, we're continuing on. Like there's no like it's that that's the part that I can say
Sometimes
about.
though you end up doing a lot more work down the road only because maybe they shifted, their concept. Maybe they realized their target market is not really who is buying from them.
For me, it's less about them shifting tactics and it's more about Meta changing the platform. And all of a sudden, what we've been doing doesn't work anymore. Now I need to come up with different solutions that can accommodate how the system has changed and the different requirements behind that. For example, right now with Meta Ads, with Meta's AI systems, you need a high volume of ad creative. Meaning, if I'm going to create an ad, like a single ad, it's not necessarily one ad anymore. It's me showing up with the concept of an ad, but multiple different types of images to support that, and multiple different types of ad copy that I can mix and match and support that. I need to show up to the table with 20 times more puzzle pieces now than 5 years ago. So when I used to be able to create an ad for a client, it was an ad. Now I'm creating multiple images, different sizes, different variations, different variants, different text. And so the volume of workload in order to support what I've always done for clients has grown. And
Oh,
that's me adapting to the system.
because Facebook owns Instagram, WhatsApp, Threads, your marketing could show up everywhere now. Different sizes
Yeah, the amount of places, I think right now we've got 22 placements in play at the moment. Where sometimes your ads are going to show up like a tiny little postage stamp on an ads on Facebook Reels, which is a little advertisement on top of somebody else's reel, or you're showing up in Facebook Marketplace, or you're showing up in Instagram Stories or Facebook Reels, or there's so many different places that your little puzzle pieces are getting mixed and matched into, and sometimes context gets lost in translation depending on the placement where your ads are showing. And to be able to adapt to that and accommodate clients, like at the end of the day, I need results to come through. And if my numbers are showing me indications that we're not getting the traction that we need, then I put the effort and the workload in to figure it out and go back to the drawing board, launch more creative. But I'll tell you, the amount of time I'm spending being a graphic designer versus an ad strategist is mind-boggling. And it's where the industry's going. So eventually the ability to create content using AI will come in handy. It's just that we're at the cusp of it. We're just not there yet. So I see this in the future, this will get easier. Right now, the first 3 months with a new client, it's a fun ride.
So, if everybody out there wants, no, I was gonna say a fun ride. That Make sure you go to thedigitalgal.com.
Oh, wow.
And then that's where we end it.
That's where we end it. It's perfect.
We'll see everyone on the next episode.